certified alcoholic. Glad to be here, glad to be sober. My sobriety date is October 6, 2005. This group's my home group, and I have a sponsor, and I sponsor others. And those three things have held me accountable to Alcoholics Anonymous since the day I got here. And every time I wanted to leave, you know, those things have just helped me stay here. And they've been very important to my sobriety. And I want to thank John for speaking. Did a great job, man. I related a lot. Definitely sounds like it's bad out there. You know, you shouldn't drink, that's for sure. And I definitely shouldn't drink, you know. It was terrible out there, and you know, and I'm not feeling particularly creative tonight. Yeah, Bill put it on me like 30 minutes. He asked me like 30 minutes before to talk, and immediately, you know, I started to feel whacked out. You know, like I get completely whacked out, and you know, I heard a female speaker once say that at some point during the talk that God will take over, and I'm like hoping He shows up soon. Because I'm like frightened, you know, you know, I want to like welcome everybody that's new, you know, Jake, welcome back, man, you know, and I'm just so glad you made it back, man, because, you know, this isn't my first time getting sober, and, you know, I struggled for a long time to get sober in Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, and I picked up like 30 white chips, you know, and so when I got back this time, you know, it was so hard because I had like 14 months before I got sober this time, and I had relapsed, and I was on like a suicide mission for like the last year, you know, and I wasn't coming back, you know, and when I went out, I was just going out for the weekend, you know, and that weekend turned into a year, and I'll get to that in a minute, but just welcome to everybody that's new, and you know, alcoholism runs in my family. My dad's dad was an alcoholic. He hung himself in a mental health facility being treated for alcoholism. My dad lost a brother to this illness when they were 18. They were driving down from Pittsburgh to Fort Lauderdale on spring break, drinking warm beer the whole way here. And my dad crashed that car, and his baby brother died in that car. And, you know, and that like really screwed him up, you know. And he had to go back and tell his mother, you know, my grandmother, that he had killed her son, you know, in a car accident. And that screwed him up. And, you know, I have an uncle that's in and out of that's been in and out of Alcoholics Anonymous since, you know, I can remember. And, you know, I don't think that's what makes me an alcoholic. You know, I know that my problem is alcoholism today, and I'm grateful. And after taking, like, inventory with my sponsor and relating to people in meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous and going to meetings, I know my problem is alcoholism. You know, I don't even question it anymore like I used to. You know, I always thought my problem was everything else. I thought it was the heroin. You know, if I could just stop doing heroin, and then I'll be fine, you know. And turns out I have alcoholism. And I take care of that here in Alcoholics Anonymous. And, you know, but growing up, I was a pretty normal kid. I ran around a lot, lit a lot of fires, and I lit the toilet paper on fire in school in, like, third grade. And I walked out, and I got in school suspension. I had to go up to the fire department and had to, like, do this, like, course. And they're like, don't ever light fires again. It's bad. And, you know, I remember, like, I never lit another fire again. You know, I just didn't have the obsession to light fires, I guess, you know. And you know, I just ran around. I played baseball. I was an all-star MVP, pitcher, catcher, shortstop, third base. I played on travel teams. And, you know, when I was 11, and if you asked me what I wanted to do when I grew up, it was to play professional baseball. You know, that's all I wanted to do. And growing up, my dad was in and out of institutions, jails, and, you know, always felt a little different. You know, always felt a little different. Never felt, like, good enough. You know, even though I was, like, doing so good in baseball, I always felt like, yeah, well, I'm just not good enough. But here I am, like, an all-star, you know, and it just was never enough. You know, and but when I was 11, my parents got divorced when I was like 2 months old. And when I was 11, my mom moved me and my sister to Boca Raton, Florida. And I moved to South Florida. And I remember on the way down, the plan was like get involved with like sports and you know, make friends and all that stuff. But something happened to me when I got to Florida. Like I had this deep rooted resentment at my mother, you know. And when I got here, I like ran away. I got on my bicycle. I rode like 22 miles up like 441, and I like realized that I wasn't gonna go anywhere. So I like, came back, and you know, my mom's like, what happened? Where did you go? And I was like, I ran away, you know. And if you want me to stay, you need to buy me a skateboard, you know? And so, you know, that would be the pattern. I would, like, play that on my mom till the day I get sober, you know? I'd use that against her, you know? And I'd be like, if you didn't move me away from all my friends, I wouldn't steal from you, you know? Or I wouldn't drink, or I wouldn't do drugs, you know? And I just played that card on her till the day I got sober, you know? And I used her up, you know? And but anyways, I'm in sunny South Florida. You know, it's beautiful, palm trees, blue skies, wall-to-wall sunshine, and I'm miserable, you know? And my two neighbors, they befriended me, Danny and Chris. They took me fishing the whole summer, and I remember it was just terrible. It was unbearable. I hated it, you know? It was hot. They made me carry, like, the bait bucket, the cast nets, the fishing rods, and I felt like I was being used, you know? And I never caught anything, and I just hated it. But the last day of summer, they're like, all right, we're going to drink, you know? And I just remember being like, okay, there was, like, no battle in my head. Should I? Shouldn't I? It was just like, okay. And I remember asking my friend who was 11 years old who never drank before, and I was like, what happens when you drink? And he's like, you get this warm feeling inside. And I just remember being like, okay, you know, that's going to be nice, you know, whatever. Just take this feeling away from me, like, whatever it is inside of me, you know. I couldn't really pinpoint it at the time, what it was, but I just remember it was, being sober was just unbearable, you know. And so anyways, we're out in the Everglades, and we go to this Mexi-Mart. I don't know if it's called the Mexi-Mart, but it was ran by a couple Mexicans, so we called it the Mexi-Mart. But we went in there, I grabbed a six-pack of Ice House, and I asked the guy, I said, what's some good wine? He said, MD 2020. So I grabbed a bottle of that, and I went up to the counter, and remind you, I'm like 90 pounds, soaking wet, 11 years old, and I put the booze on the counter, and he sold it to me, no questions asked. And up until that point, that was like the coolest thing that ever happened to me. And we went back to the fishing hole, and we both drank, or three of us, we drank two Ice House, and we started passing the bottle of MD 2020 around. And I remember my first drunk, you know, why? Because alcohol did for me that day, you know, it was just wonderful. Immediately, any doubts, worries, insecurities, fears I had were gone, you know, and alcohol set me free, you know, and I had like a record day that day. I started to catch a lot of fish, you know, and the deal is because now I'm trying, you know. Before that, I wasn't even trying, and I caught like 10 bass. They were all like over 10 pounds, and we had like a fish fry back at my mom's house, and I'm loaded. I'm wasted. I'm like hiding out in the living room trying to hide from my mom, and I remember eating, and the first time I drank, I blacked out, threw up, came to in a cold shower, and my sister smacked me across the face, told me I've been in there for hours, and there was puke all around me, and I remember laying by the toilet for like 24 hours, and I remember like swearing off alcohol completely. I swore I would never drink again, you know, just like it talks about in the big book, and from the first time I drank, that's what I did, you know, and what I found out when I got up off the floor, and like all them fears, doubts, worries, insecurities, pressures, you know, because I'm going into sixth grade, you know, came like rushing right back up to me. I knew I needed to drink again, and I knew that, you know, I didn't consciously make alcohol my master that day, you know, but, you know, I decided from that day I was going to drink, you know, and it's hard to get booze when you're 11, and I found out very early on the drug dealer didn't ID you, you know, so I became an everyday pot smoker, you know, and I started doing that, and if we wanted to drink, we would go around the neighborhoods. There's a lot of neighborhoods in South Florida, and we would go around, and if your garage door was open, you had a refrigerator in there, we would go in, we'd steal your booze, and if you had like fishing rods hanging out too, we'd grab those on the way out too, and we would be like running down the street with like booze and fishing rods back to the fishing hole and just drinking. But you know, it always seemed like I could never, like, alcohol did, it did for me, you know, it didn't seem to do for my friends. Like, alcohol, like, my friends seemed to be able to, like, you know, go out or drink or whatever, but like go to school, you know, and like get good grades and like make relationships with people, you know, and like I couldn't grasp and delve that manner of living until I got sober, you know, and everybody would like, they would stay in school, they wouldn't leave, and you know, so I found those people who were doing that stuff too, but you know, the people that I looked up to that were like my close friends, they were just on it, you know, and doing good, but so, you know, I mean, high school, I mean, I barely made it out of middle school, you know, I got a lot of scrapes there, you know, I barely passed, but high school, I remember, you know, it was just terrible, I hated being there, and it was unbearable, and I left every second I got, and like all my friends were like getting girlfriends, and you know, and I was just like always feeling like the fifth wheel or third wheel or whatever, you know, hanging out, and but anyways, I found out that alcohol made me very romantic, you know, and so we went up, I was in Pittsburgh in the winter, and I was like 15, and my buddy's like, yeah, we're going to hook you up with a girl tonight. And I was like, okay, how are we going to do that? He's like, well, you're going to get drunk. All right. And I'm like, all right, what are we drinking? He's like, screwdrivers. I'm like, what's that? He's like, it's vodka and OJ. I was like, okay, cool. And, you know, so I remember like drinking, and then I remember waking up in the backseat of a Pontiac Bonneville with my pants around my ankles, throwing up on this girl. And I rolled out of the car, and I was like puking and peeing, and you know, it was a really big party, and the party had come outside, and I was a mess. And I woke up by the toilet the next day, and everybody was talking about it, and I just remember being like, wow, you know, that's horrible. But it was like such a small price to pay for what alcohol did for me. I was like, really? I was in the back seat with him. Really? What you look like, you know? And you know, it was just a small price to pay to have that experience, you know. And so, you know, I don't know. I think from that day I got loaded every day after that, you know. I had to, you know, because I wasn't comfortable in my skin. I had to be loaded, you know. I had to be drunk, you know. I had to be on something to get me through the day, you know. And I became a high school dropout. I started getting jobs at restaurants, couldn't keep a job, you know. And now, here's the deal. Now I'm 18. I'm living at home. You know, my mom goes to work from like 9 to 5. She comes home, and it's like 4 months of this now. And she comes in my room. It's a mess. You know, there's like booze poured out on her carpet. There's paraphernalia all over her room. And she, you know, she would ask me, like, real nicely, you know, can you please just clean your room? And I'd be like, shut up, Mom, I'm sick. Give me $20, you know. And that's the type of son I was. I didn't care, you know. And so that went on for a little bit. But then she had, like, this great idea that we were going to have family therapy. And me, my mom, and sister got in the car. And we went up to this facility in South Florida. And I remember being like, yeah, I'll support you through this, Mom, whatever you're going through. And I sat down in this facility, and, like, a therapist came in, and she looked my mom right in the eyes, and she's like, what do you want to see done with your son? And I just remember being like, what? You know? And she looked me right in the eyes. She's like, I want to see him put in patient treatment. And I was like, wow. And I looked around. I think I remember seeing, like, 12 steps, 12 traditions on the wall, and I put it together that I was in treatment. And I was way too cool. I asked everybody in the room. I was like, I'll live on the streets, blah, blah, blah. You know? And then I came back in. I was like, all right, what do I got to do? You know? But so I stayed there. And, you know, I got introduced to Alcoholics Anonymous there. They would bring us to meetings. They would bring meetings in. And I just remember being like, this is stupid, you know? And I remember, because I didn't think my problem was alcohol, you know? It seemed like, I know people weren't, but it felt like they were pointing their finger at me, like, you're an alcoholic kid, you need to get help. And I just remember being like, no, my case is different, you know? That was like the story of my life. My case is different, you know? If I can just stop doing this other stuff, I can drink successfully. And from that day, I had that great obsession, you know, that hopefully, just one day, I hope I can just control and enjoy my drinking like normal people, you know? I tried for so long after that, you know, for like 4 years before I got sober. And because that's the thing. I had this great idea that it's going to be different this time, you know, and it never was. But I left that treatment center, you know, against medical advice. I had loaded up my suitcase because I turned 18 in there. And I was like, I remember like saying goodbye to my therapist. I'm like, I'm leaving. It was like this big deal. She gave me a hug, and I had my suitcase, and no buses were running. It was like Sunday night, so I walked like 10 miles with my suitcase to my buddy's house who didn't know I was coming. And the whole time when I was leaving, I was like, I'm not going to drink. You know, I understand what happens if you drink. You get at places like this, you know, and I don't ever want to come back here. The people in here were nuts, you know. And so I showed up at my buddy's house, and he wasn't there. He came home like 2 hours later. I was sitting on his doorstep, and he had a case of Heineken. And he welcomed me with open arms, you know. And you know, and I didn't know alcohol called the shots for me that time. I didn't know I left because I wanted to drink, you know. But you know, I ended up drinking that night, you know. And to make a long story short, the next 4 years of my life, I'm in and out of Alcoholics Anonymous, you know. I'm here a lot of times, you know, wanting to be here. There's a lot of times I don't want to be here. There's a lot of times I don't know what I'm doing here, you know. I would come to meetings, and I had a good friend who would let me detox on his couch, and he'd say, you can detox on my couch if you go to a meeting with me the next day. And I'd be like, alright, you know. And I would detox on his couch. I'd wake up the next morning, and I'd go to a meeting with him, and then, you know, I'd be at the end of the meeting, it'd be during the Lord's Prayer, I'd just be crying, you know, because I know I'm leaving, you know, I know I'm not going to stay here, you know. And you know, a lot of stuff happened in that 4 years where, you know, it's like I used to regret, you know. And I can choose to live my life one or two things. I can choose to live with regret or resolve. Today I choose to live with resolve, you know, through the workings and teachings of the 12 steps for Alcoholics Anonymous, you know. And I guess the last year, I got sober for like 14 months once. I was living in a halfway house in South Florida, and I basically stayed sober on fear. You know, I shot for midnight every night, you know, and, you know, it was miserable. You know, that was the deal. You know, it was just completely miserable. There was no inventory. There was no sponsorship. There was no home group. There was no, you know, like friends, you know. It was just, you know, just staying sober based on fear, because I knew I'd been thrown out of that halfway house, and I had been thrown out of every halfway house in South Florida. You know, I know this was the last stop on the block for me. And I don't know. I guess what ended up happening, I ended up getting a pretty decent job, you know, for somebody that's 20, you know, and I didn't have to be there till 11. And by 11:15, I would start obsessing about drinking. I'd take ridiculously long lunches. I'd drink on my lunch, and I'd come back, and I'd be obsessing about drinking when I got off work. And, you know, my boss approached me after like 3 months of doing that, and he's like, look, listen, you're going to have to take 2 15-minute breaks and an hour lunch, you know? And it made complete sense. Absolutely. That's what I'll do, you know? It's like, you can't go to the bathroom 30 times and do whatever you're doing in there. You can't take these 15, you know, different breaks. You can't go to lunch for 2 hours. You got 2 15-minute breaks and an hour lunch. I was like, all right. You know, I agreed to do it. The very next day, I get to work at 11. By 11:15, I'm obsessing about drinking. And I walk into his office, and I'm like, yeah, this isn't working out, you know? And he looked me in the eyes, and he was like, what? You know, this is a decent job. You're making good money, and you have a career here. And I just remember I remember just deep down inside, I needed to drink, you know? I needed to drink so bad, you know? And, you know, he's like, don't leave, you know? Think about this for a minute. And he's like, I'm going to go to the gym for lunch, and when I get back, we'll talk about this some more. He's like, don't leave. And when he left, I followed him right out the door. And, you know, I did the only thing I knew how to do to forget about you guys, that job, and the rest of the world, was I banked back a bottle of Captain Morgan's private stock. And I woke up the next day, I had like 30 missed calls on my cell phone, and it was my real good friend Phil, and I called him back, and he's like, wow. He's like, I'm so glad you're still alive. I'm like, why? What happened? He's like, you called me last night, you were drinking, you were driving, you were crying, you were threatening to drive your car into a wall. And I remember being like, wow, you know. And that was like it. That was like the last year of my drinking. That's how it went. You know, it was real disappointing. You know, there was no fun in it whatsoever. And what ended up happening was Hurricane Katrina was coming through South Florida, and my buddy I was living with at the time, he was going to Fort Myers and to get like dodge the storm. And I was like, all right, I'll go to Tampa, and because that's where my mom had moved to. And the last year of my drinking, I had detox on her couch like 3 different times, and I would go back down south to try and control my drinking. And you know, I remember I drove through 595. Hurricane Katrina was right on there. It was like a Category 1 at the time. I was driving through it drinking, you know, and coming up to Tampa having no clue that I was about to get sober. You know, I got up to Tampa, I detoxed on my mom's couch. My buddy called me. He said, you know, my uncle had bought a hotel in Kissimmee, Florida, and he needs help renovating it. And why don't you come down here? You can make some money, and, you know, we'll have a good time. I was like, all right. And so I rolled up some pennies, put the gas in my car, and I drove down there. And this is my last drunk. And we worked on the hotel a little bit. And, you know, we went up to Wink House that night, and we began drinking, and I started blacking out. Like in the beginning, it wasn't very many blackouts, but towards the end, there was a lot of blackouts, and I started to black out. I remember driving up to, we decided to play cards, I guess, because I remember being at the Hard Rock in Tampa, and we were playing cards, and then I just remember waking up in the passenger seat of my car. We were about the rear end of the car. The speedometer said 120. I looked at the person that was driving my car. He was sleeping, and I woke him up, and we spun off on the side of I-4, you know, and I remember, like, hearing I just remember being like, we are dead, you know, as the car was spinning. It was, like, happened all in slow motion. I remember being like, we are going to die, and all that happened was we spun out on this side of I-4, the bumper fell off my car, 3 flat tires, and I jumped out, he jumped out, he ran around the car and handed me my keys and said, you were driving, and I just remember being like, what? No, I wasn't driving, clearly, but up until that point, that wasn't like the worst thing that ever happened to me, right? You know, I mean, there's like so many things I didn't tell you about that was like, you would think that maybe it would be a good idea to go to AA and get sober. But I had like a moment of clarity. I was like, man, if I want to live a good life and I want to stay alive, I probably need to go back to Alcoholics Anonymous, you know? And I didn't go back the very next day. What ended up happening, I ended up getting back to that couch, and I detoxed again. And I started to pray. I started to pray last week in my drink, and I was waking up in the middle of the night paralyzed from the waist down. My lower back was hurting. I had to flip my legs over like 3 4 times a night because they I was paralyzed. They were numb. And I don't know what that really was. But so I like started to pray for a good night's sleep. That's all I wanted. You know, I just wanted a good night's sleep. And I prayed, you know, help me have a good night's sleep for like a week. And you know how my mom works 9 to 5, and I'm detoxing on her couch. And I woke up like on October 5th, 2005, and my cell phone rang. And it was this dude, Scully. He was the only person I knew in Tampa at the time. And, you know, I started with my only social skills I had at the time was to make a drug deal. And I began making a drug deal with this guy on the phone. And just nonchalantly in the living room walking around. And my mom came downstairs. And it was like 11 o'clock in the morning. And, you know, it was weird. And she looked me right in the eye. She's like, don't do it. And, you know, and I just remember being like, wow, you know, because, you know, it was, again, disappointment. You know, I disappointed my mother 100 times. You know, I didn't tell you guys about the time I stole so much money from her checking account and made her mortgage payment bounce. I didn't tell you guys the time I stole a ring from her, pawned it for $50, and for her to come to me like the next day and be like, what happened to my $5,000 ring? You know, I didn't tell you about the time I stole a car, totaled it, pushed it back in the driveway just for her to have to go to work, wake up, go to work in the morning and have to walk 3 miles to work because her car was undriveable, you know? And that's what I did. You know, there was many more times I disappointed my mother, you know, and just broke her heart. And there she was standing in front of me again. I'm like, wow, is that what I'm bringing to the table? Nothing? It's a blank sheet of paper she's holding up to me. Okay, 15? All right, cool. all right, So, I disappointed my mom again, right? So anyways, I was like, look, I need to go back to Alcoholics Anonymous. She's like, call now. She pulled out the phone book. I called AA. I called Tim at Central Office. I'm like, hey, man, my name's Lloyd. I have 3 years sober. I'm visiting from South Florida. I need a meeting. And he's like, all right, go to this meeting. And I was like, all right, you know, whatever. So I told my mom to get off my back. I was like, I'm going to this 545. I loaded up all the clothes in my car. And I was on the phone with this guy, and I walked out to the pool, and I grabbed, I made that drug deal, and I came back to the house. I ate 10 Vicodin that morning, and I was going to go out and grab 2 quarts, right? And for some reason, I passed out on the couch, and yeah, I wonder why. I always questioned that, but no, it was God. No, but no, honestly, that was nothing, you know, unusual for me to chew up 10 Vicodin in the morning. You know, that's what I did, and I would go out and grab 2 quarts, and that's what I wanted to do. I wanted to go grab 2 quarts, but I passed out on the couch. I woke up about 5 o'clock, and I looked at my watch, and I was like, man, you know, I'm going to go to that meeting. You know, I was like, I'll swing by. I'm just going to check out the AA in Tampa. You know, I have 2 friends left. One lives in Daytona. One lives in Orlando. If I don't get plugged in, or I don't find some girl to fall in love with me and take care of me, I'm just going to go there. You know, and so I got in my car, fixed a flat and 3 of my tires, no bumper. I rolled up to that club at the 545. I walked in there. I sat down, put my head against the wall, and I was like, man, I'm back in AA at 21. This sucks. Nobody's getting sober at 21. You know, and I shared that meeting. I don't know why. I shared how alcohol defeated me. 28 minutes. Wow. Okay. All right. Yeah, so I shared in that meeting, right? I shared how alcohol defeated me, you know? Where did that come from, you know? And I shared I didn't know how to live without drinking or drugging, you know? And I shared how I had 2 friends left. One lived in Daytona, one lived in Orlando, and that's where I'm going, you know? And, you know, it was a pretty small meeting, and, you know, I'd say everybody came up to me and, like, welcomed me to Alcoholics Anonymous. That wasn't my experience, but somewhere in Alcoholics Anonymous, I learned to thank the chairperson at the end of the meeting. And I went up to the chairperson, I stuck my hand out, I'm like, hey, I'm Lloyd, thanks for your service. And he said, hey, I'm Mike, what are you doing here? And I said, I don't know. And he's like, I can tell. And I immediately started to cry, you know. It started to pour out of me, you know. And I was like, I'm alcoholic, you know. And I know today was the first time I fully conceded in my innermost self that I was alcoholic, you know. And he knew exactly what to do with me, you know. He took me across the street to La Teresita, and he sat me down, and he bought me a cafe con leche and split a Cuban sandwich with me. And he started explaining alcoholism to me, you know. And he started telling me in a general way what he was like, what happened to him, what he's like now. And I knew I knew I was in bad shape. You know, I was detoxing. I needed a little bit to keep me straight. And I said, what do I got to do? You know, what do I got to do, Mike? What do I got to do? And he said, well, first you need to be alcoholic, you know. And I said, I'm bad. You know, I'm bad alcoholic, you know. And he's like, well, then he's like, I'm not going to be able to help you. You're going to have to find a higher power, you know. And I was like, how do I do that, you know. And he's like, when you go home tonight, pray and ask God to help you stay alive and help you get to the new meeting the next day and you got a shot, you know. And to me, at the time, that didn't sound like the solution, you know. To me, at the time, I needed some money, you know. I needed a loan, you know. To me, it wasn't to go home and pray and ask for help, you know. And for some reason, that's what to me, it was to go home and rob my mom and go back down south, you know. That's what I wanted to do. I was detoxed. I needed a little bit to keep me straight. I knew it would take that feeling away. It was another drink, you know. It wasn't to go home and pray, you know. For some reason, that's what I did. I went home. I asked God to help me stay alive and to help me get to that new meeting the next day and help me stay sober, you know. And that's what happened. I woke up the next day and I walked into Club 3333 at noon. And I'm so grateful for that. Everybody in that meeting had a big book, you know, and the format of it was they read a little bit out of the big book and then they share their experience on it. And there's like hundreds of years of sobriety in there. And that's when I began to relate to the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, you know. And they were on the chapter of vision for you, you know, and in the beginning of that chapter it talks about how we made alcohol our master, you know, and I've read that 100 times, and for some reason that chapter just stuck out to me, you know. We drank to get for release of worry, boredom, and care or whatever, and that's exactly why I drank, you know. There's many times I would drink and have like $1,000 in traffic tickets that I gotta pay, and just be like, yeah, I'll take care of that tomorrow, you know, and I'll call my mom tomorrow, you know, let her know I'm still alive, you know, and you know, so I just started relating to the big book, and I was like, wow, my problem is alcoholism, you know, and I'm still on the fence, I don't want to be here, you know, and you know, my whole thing was nobody my age was getting sober, you know, nobody my age was getting sober. Who's getting sober at 21? You know, that's like, it sounds like a freaking nightmare, you know, so I ended up getting in the back of this truck, and somebody's truck. They were going to a meeting in St. Pete, Monday Night Speakers. It was their 7th year anniversary. And, you know, I was like, whatever, you know, I'm detoxing still, you know, I'll go, you know, there's going to be food. And that's what it was. It was like a potluck. And then they had, you know, the main speaker. And, you know, I got there and I remember I was detoxing. And I remember, like, during the meeting, they asked for, like, newcomers, people with less than 30 days. I remember standing up. I remember that being, like, the hardest thing I ever had to do was stand up, because my ego, my pride, you know, almost got me killed. It kept me out there. You know, that last year of my drinking, I needed to come back the next day, you know. And my ego and pride just kept me out there so long. It almost got me killed. And, you know, I remember I had to stand up and be like, yeah, I'm new, I'm Lloyd alcoholic. And then what they did was they did the chips, and then they had a break, and then the main speaker. And I remember they started doing the chips. So now I got to go up and get my less than 30-day chip, right? I wasn't doing it, you know. They called it out. People were getting up and going to get their less than 30-day chip, and I just sat there, you know. And I was like, no, there's no way I'm getting up and getting that chip, you know. I picked up 30 of these things, you know, on the whole East Coast of Florida, from Jacksonville to Miami, you know. I'm not getting another one of these, you know. And this guy turned around to me and he goes, you know, you go up and get your chip. It's all about deflation of ego. And I didn't really know what that meant at the time, you know, but today I do, you know. And I walked up there and I got that chip. And, you know, and then they had a break, you know, and I remember I went outside, and right before the main speaker, I was smoking a cigarette, and I was detoxing, and, you know, still on the fence, you know, and then, like, within a couple minutes of that, you know, 5 or 6 guys came up to me, and they welcomed me to Alcoholics Anonymous, and they were my age, you know, and, you know, They had like 2-3 years sober. They had like 1 or 2 sober. They had like 6 months, 9 months sober, you know. And I believed right then and there that they once knew how I felt, you know. And they looked like they had their life together, you know. And I don't know what it was. I think that's, you know, I really think that's where I believed Alcoholics Anonymous would work for me. That whole idea that, you know, nobody my age was getting sober was just smashed, you know. And what's kind of cool about that, you know, there's a few of those guys still here today sober, you know. And that was 4 years ago. And they're my good friends, and I look up to them, you know. And they introduced me to my sponsor, Eric, and you know, I called him up and he asked him to be my sponsor because he was from Western Pennsylvania. He was a Steelers fan, and I thought he would pay my traffic tickets. And and I called him up, and he's like, "Let's go grab some coffee." You know, I had no idea that God was sending me my sponsor that day. You know, and I went and picked him up, and we sat down at Borders, and we had a cup of coffee, and he started began to tell me in a general way what he was like, what happened to him, and what he's like now. And for the first time, you know, he really materialistically he didn't have anything at the time, you know, and he was happy, you know. And I was always told to get a sponsor that has something you want, you know. And I would always get the guy with the nicest car, the hottest girlfriend, you know, the nicest place. And I could never get honest with those people, you know, because I always thought that was a solution to my illness, the material world, you know. And I tried so hard to fix myself with outside things for a long time, and it never worked, you know. And something struck me when I was talking to Eric, and he told me that the solution was between me, him, and the big book, you know. And it wasn't anything else, you know. And he told me that if I would do these things how they're laid out in the big book, that I would have the tools to do it with somebody else, you know. And and so I asked him to be my sponsor, you know. And he got me in the book right away, you know. And he had me read some things, and then we sat down and read it together. And when we came up to a step, we worked it, you know. And we did the third step prayer in his living room. And then I went out on his patio, and I wrote out, like, an honest as I could, 4-step in 4 hours, you know. And he was going out of town the next day, and he left. And he was going to be out of town for a week, you know, and the plan was to do that 5th step when he got back. And, I was a mess, you know. I was obsessing about killing myself. I was obsessing about drinking every day, you know. And I was still on the fence. I wasn't sure if I really wanted to be here, you know. And I hung in, you know. I really did. I shot for midnight every night, you know, and it was miserable. But when he got back, you know, we went up to Ballast Point, and at 24 days sober, I did a 5th step, you know, and he showed me how to do 6 and 7, and I did that, and it was like a couple days later, I was driving to a meeting, and I thought to myself, wow, I haven't thought about drinking, you know, I haven't thought about killing myself, you know, I haven't thought about that bitch ex-girlfriend of mine, you know, that dumped me, you know, because I drank too much, and she was a cocktail waitress in a strip club, but I don't judge, you know, you know, and like all those sick resentments went away, and I found out like really what was going on with me, and I was just a selfish, self-centered, egotistical maniac, you know. And I wrote out an honest 8-step, and I started making financial amends, and the promises started coming true in my life, you know. And I got into, you know, 10, 11, 12 right away, you know. And my sponsor told me, you know, when you go to the meeting tonight, you see what you can bring. You know, you've been a taker your whole life, you know. Why don't you see what you can bring to the meeting tonight? And you know, when you see that guy off in the corner, you know, welcome him to the AA, you know, and welcome to the program. And you know, sponsorship's been a big part of my sobriety since I got sober. You know, my sponsor, through sponsorship, I learned about, you know, home group, and, you know, how important a home group is, you know, and, you know, and to be active in your home group, you know, and not just to show up and sit in a chair because it was set up for you, but, you know, see what you can bring, you know, and, you know, that's not me at all, you know, I'm selfish and self-centered to the core, you know, I don't care, really, you know, but, you know, I find when I get out of myself from time to time, you know, something happens, you know, it helps me stay here. I don't understand why it works, you know. I don't understand why setting up chairs or help stacking them at the end of the meeting is really going to help me stay here, but it does, you know. I don't question it anymore, but you know, and through sponsorship, like, this fellowship started to grow up about me. I remember the first time I met Stan, I was like a week sober, and I walked up to him, and I was so excited that I was so excited to tell him that I was going to be his pigeon brother. And I went up to him, and I'm like, "Hey, Stan, I'm Lloyd, I'm your new pigeon brother." He looked me dead in the eyes, he's like, "Not for long." And I was like, "Why?" He's like, "You're going to drink." And I remember I stayed sober for like a week off that resentment. But through that, you know, I've been able to, like, just create awesome relationships with people like Stan. You know, today he's one of my greatest friends, you know. And that's I learned that here in a home group, you know. I learned that through sponsorship, you know. And there's a lot of people here that I look up to, you know. And I'm by no means a pillar in Alcoholics Anonymous, you know. There's people in AA that will do AA 100 times better than I ever will, you know. I'm not up here to tell you I'm great, you know. I'm up here to tell you the program of Alcoholics Anonymous is great when worked out of the big book, you know. And I just try to do with what you guys do, you know, that are active here. I try to follow you around, you know, and the rewards that come with that are just second to none, you know, to be able to do things that I never thought I'd be able to do. You know, I'm somebody that should be dead, you know, but I'm not, you know, and it's all to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. And what happened was, like, you know, I was rocking and rolling, you know, I was having fun, you know, we got involved with a conference, Turkey Paw, when I got sober. We hosted that in Tampa, and since then, it's just been going to conferences and helping out with conferences and just having a lot of fun and going all over Florida and outreaching events and, you know, having a blast in AA, you know. And right around the time I picked up 3 years sober, I started to look around at my life, you know. I started to look around and was like, wow, you know, look how good I'm doing, you know. And I started saying that to myself. And, you know, I had gotten straight A's in school, you know. I was working. I had, like, friends and stuff. And, you know, I was sponsoring guys. I was sponsoring, like, four guys. They all had over, like, 2 years sober. One lived in Japan. You know, I was internationally known. And, I started to get this big head, you know, and slowly I started to walk away from the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, like 3 years sober, and I got down to like one meeting a week. How we doing? We alright? Alright. And I got down to like one meeting a week. And, you know, I started hiding behind school, you know, I started hiding behind work, I started hiding behind the gym, you know, and, AA just became less important to me, you know, and, you know, my sponsor approached me, and he's like, I'm moving to D.C., you know, and, you know, and he's like, and I just started to think to myself, this was just a bunch of bullshit, you know. And I didn't really, you know, I thought, wow, look at this, you know, I've been here 3.5 years now, and you know, I don't think this is for me anymore, you know. I think this was just a stop in the journey, you know. You know, I really did. You know, I didn't think I was going to stay. And, you know, so I stopped calling my sponsor. You know, I couldn't tell him. You know, I was trying to control one aspect of my life, and I was going to make it work, you know. I was really going to make it work, you know. And, you know, and he told me it's not going to work, you know. He's like, you can't control the situation. So I just stopped talking to him. You know, I can't call him. You know, he's just going to tell me this isn't going to work, you know. And so I tried that out, and I got resentful at my sponsor, you know, and I started to judge my home group. And, you know, I almost judged my way right out of here. And it was like 3 months ago, I had a big head in the little program. You know, 3 months ago, I was way too sick to be up here. You know, like, it would have just been all ego. You know, it wouldn't have been anything good. And not that if it is good now, but I don't know. But anyways, so, you know, it was like 3 months ago, I was in my room, and I was going to leave Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, I was crying. I was like, I'm going back down to South Florida. You know, I'm going to go control my drinking, you know. In a last-ditch effort to stay in Alcoholics Anonymous, I called this man by the name of Bobby, and I don't know why. He doesn't know me. You know, he didn't know me. I was a speaker once. I got him to speak at a couple meetings, and I just called him up, and I was like, hey, man, you don't know me, and I choked it all out, and I told him what was going on, and he asked me. He said, are you a prey to misery and depression? Clearly, I was. He said, are you having trouble with personal relationships? Clearly, I was. You know, I pushed everybody out of my life, you know. And it was, are you having trouble controlling your emotional nature? Yes, you know. And he, right out of the big book, right out of We Agnostic, he laid it on me, and he was like, you're a dry drunk, you know. And I was like, wow, really? Me? You know? I heard that term in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I was like, that'll never be me, you know. He said, how many meetings are you going to a week? I said, one, you know. I was going to my home group, that was it, you know. And he's like, yeah. He's like, are you praying? And I was like, no, you know. He's like, yeah, you love everything, you love the outside world more than you love the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I was like, wow, you know, I saw it, you know. And he knew exactly what to do with me. He got me right back into the book, and, you know, we started working the steps, you know. He really got me back to be the person I needed to be today, and that's a man of God and his children, you know. And he got me right back in doing service, you know. And he got me right back in, you know, just running around and helping, you know, and being a giver, you know. And, you know, I don't know. I don't know why I was able to get through that. You know, it was a lot of work, you know. And I wanted to run so many times, you know. There were so many times where I didn't want to be here, you know, but I made it through, you know. And it was nothing short of God, you know. And I don't even question it, you know. Since I've been here, in and out, since I've been here this time, I've seen a lot of people leave and not come back, you know, because things get a little dicey, you know, and things get a little hard, you know, and people just leave, you know, because the feelings, I understand it. I understand it completely. The feelings are overwhelming of insecurity, you know, and it's like, that's why I drank, you know, and those feelings make people leave here, you know, and I'm just so grateful that I didn't have to leave, you know. I'm so grateful that, you know, I made it to my 4-year anniversary, you know, because I wasn't, you know, there was a time where I was leaving, you know, and I don't know why I've been given that gift to stay here, you know, because I've seen people leave, you know, and but I'm extremely grateful, you know, because I don't ever want to forget, you know, how bad it was out there, you know, because it was terrible, you know, and you know, like I said, I'm just, you know, glad to be here. I want to thank Bill for asking me to speak, and thanks. Bye.
Hi, I'm Annie, and I'm an alcoholic. Howdy. Dr. Bob's last message, delivered at the first International Conference of Alcoholics Anonymous at Cleveland, Ohio, in 1950. I get a big thrill out of looking over a vast sea of faces like this with a feeling that possibly some small thing I did a number of years ago played an infinitely small part in making this meeting possible. I also get quite a thrill when I think that we all had the same problem. We all did the same things. We all get the same results in proportion to our zeal and enthusiasm and stick-to-itiveness. If you will pardon the injection of a personal note at this time, let me say that I have been in bed 5 of the last 7 months, and my strength has not returned as I would like, so my remarks of necessity will be brief. But there are 2 or 3 things that flashed in my mind which it would be fitting to lay a little emphasis. One is the simplicity of our program. Let's not louse it up with Freudian complexes and things that are interesting to the scientific mind, but have very little to do with actual AA work. Our 12 steps, when simmered down to the last, resolve themselves into the words love and service. We understand what love is, and we understand what service is, so let's bear those 2 things in mind. Let us also remember to guard the erring member of the tongue. And if we must use it, let's use it with kindness and consideration and tolerance. And one more thing. None of us would be here today if somebody hadn't taken the time to explain things to us, to give us a little pat on the back, to take us to a meeting or two, to have done numerous little kind and thoughtful acts on our behalf. So let us never get the degree of smug complacency so that we're not willing to extend or attempt to that help which has been so beneficial to us. To our less fortunate brothers, thank you very much.
This home group strongly believes in sponsorship. Will anyone that is willing to be a sponsor please raise your hand? Will home group members please raise your hand? If you'd like to join this home group, please see Katie after the meeting. And anyone that would like to...